It feels good to be back on the air recording another episode, don't you think?
Yeah. And we, unfortunately, and we kind of had a feeling it was going to happen.
When we started this podcast, we said we wanted to come out with two episodes a month on the 1st and the 15th of each month. But you know what? The 15th of the last month, which was October, we were up to our eyeballs in production on our film. And we just, as much as we hated to not release a podcast episode on the 15th, as we had promised, we just couldn't make it happen.
We were in the middle of doing three days of nights.
3 days of nights.
Three night shoots back to back to back. And so we were tapped. That was all we could manage.
It was brutal.
Yeah. So anyway, our apologies, and we're on to the next episode. This episode contains some bad language. So if you've got some kids within earshot, you may want to put on some headphones.
For me, it's just curiosity. Curiosity is the bedrock of getting brilliance out of anybody.
All set?
All set.
Hi, my name is Chris Hollow.
And I'm Mark Masri, and this is episode number 14 of Creativity in Motion, a podcast about creativity where we talk with creatives of all kinds to find out why they create and especially how they overcome creative obstacles.
In this episode, we're talking with award-winning author, journalist, and self-belief enthusiast, Lacey Johnson.
Before we get started with Lacey, we want to tell you about our sponsor, NOCE College of Art. NOCE College opened in 1973 as a fine art school and has transformed into Tennessee's only private art college. They offer bachelor's degree programs in commercial illustration, graphic design, video and film, and photography. Starting this year, they launched their brand new culinary arts associate's degree. They have a beautiful 55,000 square foot facility that was built with the artistic student in mind. It includes computer labs, production suites, photography and video studios, and a fully stocked equipment cage. Everything students need to get creative. If you want to learn more about NOCE College of Art, you can visit noce.edu for degree program details, faculty information, and student work.
Today we're talking with author and journalist Lacey Johnson. Lacey is a classic multi-hyphenate creative who has not only written for Oprah.com, Cosmopolitan, Marie Claire, Woman's Day, and many others, but is also the creator and founder of an online media platform called The Wonder Report, and is nearing completion on a soon-to-be-released book project. Lacey, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, and I have to tell you, this is so funny that NOCE College of Art, they're one of your sponsors.
Yeah.
I'm actually on their wall. Yes, at the entrance.
The modeling days.
Yes. I've modeled for many of their very talented students, now graduates. I just had a shoot for my book, and he's actually, Antonio, he actually met him there. He's a NOCE graduate. He's so talented. Yeah.
I'd forgotten that. I mean, I haven't been in the building in a while, but I forgot that you were on the wall there.
She's in the driver's seat of a super fancy sports
car.
That's right.
That's right. It's a huge print too.
It's like 9 or 10 years ago, but yeah.
Yeah.
It's probably 10 foot tall.
It's huge.
It's huge. Yeah.
I teach there in the photography department.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I was trying to remember how we met, and I know it was through modeling.
Yes.
Back in those days.
Weird to me, because it feels like another life ago.
It does. But I don't remember who introduced us or how we met.
I don't remember.
I don't either.
I don't remember.
I remember a couple of specific shoots. Like one was like a hippie 1970s kind of.
Yeah.
Good stuff. I just couldn't remember who introduced us or
and
how
we became, we were acquainted on Facebook, and I was editor in chief of The Connect magazine.
That's right. Yes.
We connected, and then you became our house photographer and videographer.
That's right.
And that's it. You were so phenomenal.
Oh yeah. I was just trying to remember that we did that for quite a while. A
couple of years.
Yeah. That was good. But I enjoyed listening to you interview a lot of those folks.
Thank you.
There's a lot of good people, a lot of interesting stories that I got to listen in on. Mm-hmm.
How is it being on the other end of the microphone as being the person that's being interviewed? Like when people are interviewing you, are you like, oh, don't ask that. That's a bad question.
Oh, God, no. You know what? I don't feel it's any different. For me, whether I'm when I'm interviewing somebody, I'm just, we're in conversation. It's an exchange. It's a collaboration. It doesn't feel any different. It truly doesn't. I'm curious, like we're bouncing ideas off of each other. We're exploring a subject matter. And it, to me, it's all, we're illuminating the human experience, like a different facet of the human experience. So whether I'm being interviewed on a podcast or I'm interviewing someone and no one's listening, or it's the same. People actually ask me that a lot, and it doesn't feel any different.
Would you say most of the time when you're interviewing people for these magazines, it's by phone, or do you do it in person?
Zoom. I've done Zoom. In person, a Zoom, FaceTime, over the phone. And it really doesn't matter. If there's a connection, there's a connection. And if there isn't, there isn't, you know. Most of the time, there's usually, sometimes it takes a little longer for the ice to break. And people are coming to the conversation with whatever filter they're operating from, whether they're feeling really optimistic or they're feeling really stressed out, or they're in their left hemisphere of their brain and they're very analytical and I've got this and this to do, or maybe they're more in their right hemisphere, so they're feeling very emotional and things are possible and exciting. But so you kind of have to just, for me, it's just curiosity. Curiosity is the bedrock of getting brilliance out of anybody, you know, just being genuinely curious about them as a person or just the human experience as a whole.
That's a good parallel between a lot of what we do, in that when we are, even something as simple as a portrait of someone, mm-hmm. a lot of times their boss told them to go at 3 o'clock and get their headshot made, right. or something. And it takes a minute to break through the ice sometimes and to sure. get them to open up and to be real, because
right.
they may or may not want to be there. Like you were saying, if they're on a press junket, they may or may not be. That you might be their fifth interview that day.
Exactly.
And they end up saying the same thing 5 times, more or less.
Exactly.
And it's up to you to get them to say something different. And it's up to us to get some realism out of them when they may or may not want to be there.
Yeah. And make them comfortable and be curious and honor their thoughts and, you know, for sure.
I would think doing an interview on Zoom or FaceTime is a little bit of a lack of control on your part, because you only see what their camera is showing you. And so you have no idea what other distractions might be in the room with them, whether they're looking out a window and there's cars going by, or there's a construction going on across the street, mm-hmm. or they have interruptions that are out of view of the camera. And so keeping them focused on kind of holding their eye and their gaze when you're speaking to them, you don't have control of that, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, classically, everybody's been working from home here in the last year and a half. And you hear stories of people's kids running through the background, or the dog wandering into the room, or the cat jumping up on the desk while you're in the middle of a work meeting or something like that. And it can totally blow the
story of my life this past year. You have no idea.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
Oh, yeah. I have seen and heard some shit show things. And I actually have, I did some pretty big interviews. Actually, this one that was made its way to the front page of Oprah.com. My daughter was not quite 12 months old, and I was on the interview, had my phone on speaker, and I'm like feeding her in her high chair. I mean, what else was I supposed to do? But I don't know if I view that as an obstacle. I'm not usually concerned. Maybe I should be. I'm not super concerned with what distractions they have. I'm so fully aware that they're wearing probably so many hats, balancing so many plates. I don't know what they're looking at. I don't know what they're dealing with. I just try to kind of connect with just the space of just human connection, of beauty. I just kind of try to seek that beauty, that possibility, just kind of illuminate something beautiful about their story. And I just try to tap into that. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And I've done this enough and long enough now that I don't have a lot of emotional attachment about the outcome. And I can say that about creative work as well. Like, I don't have as much attachment to the outcome. I'm more attached to the way I show up within it, the way I show up when I'm creating, when I'm experiencing, that is what I really try to attach myself to the most.
The journey.
The journey, for sure.
And just being true to yourself as far as your own participation in the process, with an understanding that you can't control what they have brought to it, you know, so being super tied to the outcome is, you know, risky, right? Because it can leave you disappointed with the outcome when in fact your own participation and your own role in that might have been outstanding. So that makes a lot of sense. And I think that's a good thing for people to remember.
I agree with you. And I don't just think it's risky. I think it's an absolute recipe for disaster. If you go into something, whether you're writing a song or you're taking a portrait or you're painting, you know, or you're writing a book or whatever you're doing, if you are, obviously you want to be attached, but you don't want to be at the same time. You want to be excellent. You want to be as excellent as possible, especially if you're trying to monetize it. But not so much that you're obsessed or you're slipping into perfectionism. You can't be so attached because there's only a part of the outcome that you're even responsible for. I have a kind of a mystical relationship or view of creativity. It's not super rational, but it's pretty enchanting. I kind of don't think that I'm pulling brilliance out of myself. I don't really see it that way. Obviously, I think there are people who are more intelligent than others, perhaps more gifted than others, maybe, but I don't really see it as like I'm pulling, you know, squeezing every bit of creative juice out of myself. I almost see it as I'm a receptor. I'm a satellite. I'm receiving something external. I don't really define what that is. And I don't think I really have to, but I'm just sort of allowing the creativity and the divine inspiration to flow through me and through my own consciousness. So naturally my own life experiences are going to come out through it, but it's a true collaboration with something a little bit more supernatural. That kind of allows me to relax in my creative process, whether I'm interviewing someone or I'm writing my book or writing an essay, because it kind of lets me off the hook a little bit. I'm one part of that creative work, but I'm not all of it. But the same can be said, like it lets me off the hook if it's not great, but if it's brilliant, it's not entirely on me either. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, completely. And I think that's a really good thing for a lot of people think that being creative or having creativity is something that you're either born with or you're not, right? And so you said you have a mystical relationship to that. And I feel like my relationship to creativity is actually more on the pragmatic, mm-hmm. mechanical mm-hmm. side. And so what I like to do, especially in teaching, is try to get students to understand that there are things that you can do, whether it's routines or habits, and that you can do to put yourself in a creative space so that you can create an environment for yourself to be creative.
Oh, I agree with that 100% as well.
And I think it's a really good thing to keep in mind, especially in a collaborative endeavor, that you owe the thing that you're creating is a literal collaboration, mm-hmm. and it's out of your control what the others bring to it and how they execute,
exactly.
you know, their part of it, which is part of what makes the final result so unique, so brilliant, so beautiful, so memorable, because it probably could never happen that way again. It's a product of being in the moment. You bring all of your preparation, all of your experience to it. And in that moment, you create this thing that it's a one of a kind, mm-hmm. you know,
mm-hmm.
we're big time collaborators. Mm-hmm. We collaborate on this podcast, you know, I mean, it wouldn't exist in the form that it exists without a collaboration.
And I love that. And then, so then it kind of becomes its own entity, you know, it's a fusion of your creative intelligence and your creative intelligence. That's such a beautiful thing.
And this episode is a totally different thing. It's exactly. a one-off from that because of what you bring to it, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
And we wanted to create something that could become any one of a number of different things, depending on who else we invite to collaborate.
Sure.
And create the shell and the space for that to exist.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. As the best collaborations do, I think.
You say you don't sort of tie your self-worth into the outcome, but how does that come naturally to you, or does that take work?
I have to discipline. It'll never come naturally because I'm a human and I have a really huge ego. Mm. You know what I mean?
Like clearly
every artist does. I mean, you know, so I have to kind of give it my ego the old whip, you know, and remind myself, I put myself in check, continuously. If something comes out and people think it's brilliant, I put my ego in check and I'm like, I am honored that people are having this experience. I'm so grateful. But I'm not defined by a single creative work. I'm not defined by one thing, whether it's performed beautifully or not. It wasn't always this way. Obviously, I had to get burned and fail some creatively to get to this place, you know, I think where I was like, okay, so I am a very creative person. I am enlivened and enriched by my creative process. It's not something that I ever want to give up. How can I change my relationship with it to where it's not this agonizing plight, the artist, you know, the plight of the creative,
oh, yeah.
the bane of the creative, and how can I show up in this differently in a more empowered way? And I think that I sort of discovered that I am a human on this earth. The most natural way that I can honor my creator is by continuing the creative process. It is natural to all of us to be creative. I allow that to move through me. And I deserve to be a participant on this planet, whether people fall in love with my work or they don't. And I think when I have that shift is when my success started to really come.
You mentioned the artist plight and kind of putting your work out there. It's hard because it's so personal.
Mm-hmm.
And
sure.
especially if you're creating entirely on your own. A lot of what we do is so collaborative that you can't really, like you said, take complete responsibility for it. And yet you struggle with trying to, because it's important and you're trying to make the outcome be what you want. And sometimes you have to let that go. And right. the output is what it's going to be.
Nor can you blame someone else for the outcome because you're just as much of a part of it as they are.
Nor can you blame someone for their response to the outcome because people have their interpretation.
Right.
So I think for me, one of the biggest shifts was another shift. I used to, you know, you hear creative people, oh, my work is my baby, my painting, that's my baby, or this book, this is my baby, or you hear recording artists, well, these 12 songs on this album, they're all my babies. You know, this album's my baby. I used to be like that, but my work is not my baby. So
your baby is your baby.
Yeah. My baby's well, that my little girl is my baby, but yeah. I don't see it that way. It is my baby so long as I'm working on it and I nurture it and I feed it and I give it what it needs. And I grow it as best as I can. And then once it's out into the world, it's not really my responsibility how other people respond, because again, they're meeting my work with their own, whatever, you know, biases they're working with.
Baggage,
whatever their worldview, whatever their, you know, it's different than mine. We all have a unique worldview. So, and preferences and quirks and whatever. And so I don't see it as my baby. I don't really freak out about that kind of thing anymore, but I used to like, oh my, I wanted everyone to like it. But now it's like, it's not really my business. If someone loves or hates it, I hope that they're blessed by it. That is always my intention when I'm creating something, but I totally show up fully. And then once it's out in the world, it's not really mine anymore.
You got to let it go.
Yeah. It's not really mine anymore.
Set it free.
It's a hard thing to do, but I will say that it's remarkable what people will make of your work.
Mm-hmm.
It's remarkable the things that they will read into it, or the ways that it will make them feel, even if it's negative, even if people say, this is terrible, how can this person think that this is good, or this is not a good thing to have in the world? That every time someone comments on what you put out or what I put out or what Chris has put out, it's an equal commentary about them, because it's a mirror into, I think, a lot of times into who they are.
And it absolutely is.
And I think the best art does that. Mm-hmm. The best creative endeavors are the ones who put a stake in the ground and say, relate yourselves to this. Mm-hmm. And because that's what I think that people are doing that consume art. They're relating themselves to this. And a lot of times it comes off as people commenting on the art, but in so doing, you are revealing who you are and your own personal biases.
It's nothing but a projection. Everything is a projection.
The art becomes a catalyst 100%. For revealing all of this other thing. And that's why I think that's so incredible.
Well, there are a couple of things that makes me think of. I interviewed Dr. Deepak Chopra years ago. He wrote this brilliant book. He's written many books, but You Are the Universe is probably my favorite book of his. And he talks about how our paradigms, which are really developed during our very early years of childhood development, there's all these generational conditionings and observational conditionings. And our paradigm is that's what we view everything through the lens of our paradigm, our beliefs, our knee-jerk reactions, and things that trigger us. And it was interesting because he talks about how in order to free yourself from your paradigm, it's sort of like this jumping out process. But we also talked about the fact that it's sort of like looking through a funhouse mirror. So when you see a creative work, certain things are exaggerated that trigger you, and certain things you may not see at all. They're teeny tiny. And I'll tell you what you were just talking about. I think one thing that freed me, I'm a creative person, you know, I'm a writer, but I'm also a journalist who, you know, focuses primarily on mental health and relationships. So my study of like psychology and neuroscience has helped free me from people's reactions to my work. I'm telling you, like, if you think of the reticular activating system, we see everything that we see in life. Our reticular activating system manipulates the parameters of everything that we see. You know, that's why your brain kind of has to organize itself that way.
Give us an example.
So, okay, let's say, and here's an example actually in my workbook. Let's say you get a job offer in Arizona, okay? And you don't know anybody in Arizona. You don't have any friends and family there, but the salary is like crazy good. You've never been to Arizona, but the salary is so good that, and you're thinking about it so hard that you want a sign. You want there to be a sign, something to nudge you because you don't really have any other reason to go there. Well, that's going to light up the reticular activating system that's in your frontal lobe of your brain. And so you all of a sudden might see Arizona license plates all over the interstate. You might go to Home Goods and see desert figurines everywhere. You might be in line at the coffee shop and overhear somebody talk about their amazing trip to Sedona. You may have, those same things may have occurred a week before, but before that was put on your radar, before that was in your brain, you didn't even hear it because your brain, we are just constantly hit with so much data that we see the things that we know and we miss the things that we don't know. You know, the brain really, really, really likes what it knows. So if you tie that back to a piece of creative work, let's say that a person is really triggered by certain subject matters and they read one of my essays and there's a word or something that reminds them of something that's on their brain that they believe, and that they can have a violent reaction and they're missing so many other parts of it. And then the next person could think it's the most beautiful, compelling, heartfelt, you know, conscious piece of work on the planet, you know, because they have different information that their reticular activating system is processing. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Completely. Yeah. I mean, there are hundreds of examples, right? A couple of years ago, I heard that Ford was going to reintroduce the Ford Bronco, you know, one of their most popular vehicles ever. And I thought, oh, that's going to be kind of cool. And then a year goes by and I finally saw a billboard for it on I-65. And I thought, oh, I guess they are going to come out with the Bronco. And then I could never see a Bronco on the road. I'm like, I guess this has been delayed or something. And then one day I saw a Bronco in a parking lot. And then the next day, I saw like 8 of them.
Mm-hmm.
So
of course.
It's
your brain is brilliant. I mean, it's...
Yeah. Well, once you become aware of it, you truly are aware of it.
You are. But if you let me tell you how powerful this is, though. Think about all the things that go right past you that could change your life or that could spark you that you don't see. That's why it's so important to, and this is kind of going off on another subject, but to feed your creative, like give yourself a really satiating creative palate at all times. What feeds your creativity? What keeps you inspired? What podcasts are you listening to? What YouTube videos are you watching? What push notifications are you subscribed to? What blogs do you read? What conversations do you have? Because that is what you will see again and again and again. And I know for me, I have to be very, very careful about what I let into my brain because it absolutely affects my work. It affects my self-belief. It affects my mental health. And it affects my creative process. You know, there's certain types of music that feed me. I know that if I'm going to be working on an essay that's, and I need to be in a certain headspace, there are certain people that I can't talk to for a few days. And I'm not being rude. I'm being dead serious.
No, I get it.
I mean, it will make a difference. So it's so important.
So if you take this creative feed, like if you think of it as a feed, mm-hmm. right? And mm-hmm. it's music and podcasts and articles you read and it can be everything from those things to the route that you take to get to the grocery store
yeah.
or the your decision to walk somewhere instead of driving
Absolutely.
Or anything. So if you take your creative feed, which you curate.
Absolutely.
How do you, having a curated feed is a double-edged sword because if you always are curating your feed to be the same way, then how does new stuff
You don't have to do it. You don't have to curate it the same way.
But my point is, if the brain likes what it likes, how do you get new stuff in to give new opportunities? And I'm not saying that you don't. We all do. In fact, I believe for me, it's 80% doing the things that I know I love mm-hmm. because that helps me get better at mm-hmm. them and understand them better and attain a level of expertise in those things. That's how Chris and I have gotten where we are in still photography, and it's where we're going with filmmaking. Mm-hmm. The 20% is a conscious decision on my part to listen to the bluegrass station on XM mm-hmm. or to flip over to a hip-hop station on XM because those are not things that are in my curated feed because those are not things that historically have not fed me. Mm-hmm. But I have to remain open
Exactly.
to those things,
your
right?
conscious mind.
That's right.
So you, yeah. So like the things that your brain likes what it knows, but when we talk about that, we're really talking about the subconscious mind, which is in control about 92, depending on who you are, 92 to 98% of the time. The conscious mind is only running the show 2 to 8% of the time. So the conscious mind is your wishes and desires. It makes decisions. The conscious mind says, I am going to finish this book. I am going to sit down on my ass and I'm going to write this damn song. You know, I want to succeed. I'm going to go out and get that record deal. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to find a literary agent. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to secure the biggest, baddest photo shoot. Okay. But your subconscious mind is all of your faulty and good subconscious programmings. It's what's familiar. It's what you know. It's what you read, like your shadow beliefs. So that's kind of going back to like that jumping out process that I'm talking about. You have to try your best every single day as much as possible, which it'll never happen completely, to get the information in your conscious mind and your subconscious mind to align as much as possible, to kind of narrow that gap as much as possible. And so one way you do that, kind of going back to what you were just talking about, when you're curating your creative feed, your arsenal of creative tools and inspirations, obviously you're going to gravitate to what you already know and what already works. And you should, because you're going to be comforted by that. It's familiar. You know what feeds you, but you kind of have to jump out of that every now and then and try something new. And you're under no obligation to like those new things. Maybe you could try when you're working, say, you know what? I think I'm going to listen to jazz for a few days. And then you listen to jazz and sometimes you might fall in love and it inspires a crazy new work that you never thought you could come up with. Or you may be like, you know, I'm not jiving with that. So you try something else. You just constantly invite new, you make a conscious choice to invite things that contrast with what's already in there, and you invite new things inside, and that's how you continue to evolve creatively. That's one way.
So you're saying we're all living in the matrix right now.
Yeah,
and we're
much.
All just waiting on the green or the red pill.
Yeah.
Because you know, there are times when I'm Neo and I'm totally enjoying my blindness.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I find comfort sometimes in just being on the path that I know exists.
Yeah.
And that's comforting. I know what I know, mm-hmm. and that feels good.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are times when I need to know what I don't know.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to push myself into figuring out what that thing is that I've never seen or I don't know. And that's the other, you know, 5%, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, true.
One of the exercises I do sometimes in my class is I bring up a website for the remote associates test. Do you know what remote
associates?
No,
I've never heard of that.
You do. You just don't know it is that.
Yes, you do.
I do.
So an example would be, if I gave you three words and said, what's the one word that connects them?
Okay.
So if I gave you the three words, mark, goal, and office. Mm-hmm. And I said, what one word connects all those? And so the word is post. Mm-hmm. Goal post,
yeah.
Post office,
right.
Postmark,
yeah. Uh-huh.
Right? You would never think of those three words as being related, except
right.
when you think of them through the lens or view them through the lens of that one other word. So the idea that they have a remote association. And you mentioned a minute ago that one of the goals is to get your consciousness and your subconsciousness to be closer together so that things can migrate. That's the way
yes.
I think
yeah.
of it.
Yes.
So that happens a lot when you're relaxed, mm-hmm. when you're in the shower, when you're just waking up
yep.
in the morning. Because you're coming from a state, when you're just waking up in the morning, you're coming from a state of unconsciousness
yep.
where your subconscious has been playing in the playground of your brain.
Rampant. Yes.
It's been running rampant.
Yeah.
And one of the things that happens when you sleep, and a lot of people who have written lots about creativity, and I've read lots about creativity, they say that your brain, when you sleep, is trying to make connections of experiences that you've had in your past. And it could be something that you experienced 20 years ago that they're trying to match up with something. When I say they, I mean the people in your brain.
The squirrels.
Yes. They're trying to put together the bad pizza you had at lunch with an overtime win that you had in your soccer game when you were 17 years old. And they're randomly trying to create connections between
yeah.
things. And when your brain, in all its incredible infinite power, is able to do that and make a connection in your subconscious, the chore then, the task becomes, how do you elevate that into the conscious part, you know, of mm-hmm. the human? And so when you're coming out of that sleep, or when you're very, very, very deeply relaxed, which for a lot of people happens when they're in the shower or the bath, that's when you have ideas. That's when you start becoming aware of these associations being created in your brain, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a website, you can just Google it, Remote Associates Test.
Okay.
And they have probably 40 or 50 of these word problems. And I bring it up in class just as a fun exercise because students have never heard of it. And so we'll do two or three, and I usually try to do it when we're in the middle of doing something else and we take a break. I say, okay, let's switch gears. Because the switching of gears is very important. It allows the part of your brain that's been concentrating on that one thing that you were just doing, it allows it to relax about that.
Love
and it puts your attention onto something else. So that when you come back to that thing, you literally have a fresh pair of eyes. You can approach it with from a fresh thought perspective. And you see things that were right in front of you moments ago
exactly.
that you just, for whatever reason, didn't see. And I experience that all the time, and I know that Chris does too. When we do a photo shoot, we come back to the studio, we come back to our office or our computer, and we download those images, and we go through the shoot, and we say, oh, that's the best one, that's the best one, and that's the best one. And then we get away from that for 2 or 3 days, and we come back to it 4 days later, we go, well, hang on a second. That one that I thought was so good actually isn't that good, but look at these over here that I totally missed the first time around. you're switching gears, you're relaxing parts of your brain, and you're coming back to these things with a renewed perspective and a fresh perspective. It's one of the hardest things in the world to turn that into a discipline and realize that just because we can go out and do a photo shoot in an hour and come back and actually download the images and look at the images and edit the images maybe in 2 hours and then deliver the product to the client, we actually may not have chosen the best images.
Yeah.
You know, we need to build that time into the creative process, that relaxing time, that time away, so that we can come back and see it again.
Yes. Reminds me so much of this quote. I think Socrates said that brilliance can only come when a human is beside himself and bereft of his senses. And that reminds me so much of what you're saying. You kind of have to get out of your own way. You have to kind of get beside yourself and that brain chatter, and so that you can come back and let that brilliance flow and see it through a different lens.
And a lot of times the harder you try to, like those word association things you're talking about, like that is not a game I can play.
Yeah.
That kind of recall doesn't happen to me only when I stop thinking about it.
Oh,
like the harder I try, the worse it gets.
You wouldn't have come up with post until later when you're out mowing.
Yeah.
And you were like, oh, post, duh.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have. I couldn't think of it when you said. I was just like,
I know. That was a long pause for me, too. Like, it's like, I don't know where this is going.
I get no connection here.
Yeah. But when you understand how that game works, you sort of can think about ways to apply that in your creative life and then expand out from there to what you said about creating, curating your creative feed, whether it's blogs or music or the way you cook or different people that you speak to during the week, that all of those things are eligible for remote associations. Mm-hmm. And if you are in the habit of giving yourself time to be relaxed, giving your subconscious time to ponder these things so that it can come up with original ideas and combinations of these things that are related, that are truly related when you look at them from the right way, but seem to be completely unrelated, then I think you give yourself the best chance at being creative, having an original thought, original idea.
Mm-hmm. I feel like remote association is like a category in Jeopardy.
I think it actually is.
Really?
Yeah. It's like, I'll take remote associations for 300, Alex. Yeah.
My husband would know.
And that's, I still can't do that either.
Jeopardy fanatic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The neuroscience, Chris will tell you, I've gone down the rabbit hole in the last 5 years on the neuroscience of creativity.
That's amazing.
So we can talk about this till the cows come home. If you are a creative professional and you're trying to give yourself an edge in a marketplace that's incredibly that's incredibly competitive, being aware of these the mechanical processes that absolutely anyone can access and can put in place in their daily routine to give you an edge creatively, I think is, why would you not do that, right? Mm-hmm. Especially if you don't consider yourself a particularly creative person, then I would think that you would want to do everything in your power to increase your creativity and the chances that you'll have these original and interesting ideas. What are some of the things that, when you think back on things that have either inspired you or things that are like signposts along the way of your own personal history that you return to time and again because they have inspired you originally, but on subsequent visits, you've discovered new depths, new ideas. They have come to mean more to you as...
You mean memories, like experiences in my
experiences,
life?
Experiences, movies, songs, places you visit that have deeper meaning to you, you know, beyond what you experienced the first time.
Yeah. So I'm definitely inspired by nature. It's inspired by beautiful music as well, a beautiful landscape. But I would say what most inspires my work, of course, the nature of what I do is I interview humans and write about and research about, you know, different areas of mental health and relationships and the science of success and things like that. I would say what I return to in my work that inspires me is human pain and human joy, really in contrasting emotions. I think that involves paying attention. I've always been very observant in my life. I am very observant about human emotions. And, you know, I experienced a lot of tragedy from a very young age. I was completely saturated in grief when I was a little girl. I had experienced a family-wide tragedy. My mom and my grandma and my two aunts passed away in an explosion. So there really, for about a year, there was no adult in my life who wasn't grieving all the time because my mother's family was grieving her and my father's family was grieving my two aunts and my grandma and all. There were a lot of children without their mothers anymore. And so I think maybe that was the beginning of sort of forcing me to really absorbing and noticing and just observing humans and their needs. And, you know, it's weird, but like I have constantly been inspired by the gifts and beauty in pain. And I will say it continues to inspire my work throughout. So one thing that I would like an example of that would be when I was pregnant with my daughter. She's 2.5 now. Obviously, it's a really hard thing to get pregnant and not have your mother, but I have a stepmom who really loves me, and she put the nursery together for me. And on the day of my baby shower, she stood there and she was like teary-eyed and looking at like all the diapers and burpees and onesies stocked in the diaper changing station. And it was weird. I was like thinking, what a gift this is. Like, it's not a gift that my mom's not here, but I have this woman who didn't give birth to me, who's choosing to love me and be here for me. It doesn't take the pain away, but it's just an example of life's gorgeous, fantastic mystery and transformation process and the gifts. So I think that what inspires my work would be seeking my endless pursuit of gifts and beauty through the good, the bad, the ugly, the awful, the crushing, the exhilarating, and the unremarkable in between.
Would you say then that could you distill that down to saying that you're an optimist?
I don't know. I don't know that I am, because I'm not always optimistic. I think I'm in love with finding the beauty in everything. I don't believe in putting a positive spin. I don't really believe in putting a spin on anything. I think there are some subjects that are just horrible. And I think, you know, sometimes there's a lot of a toxic side to positivity. But I would say I am a person who observes and honors the ugliness in something while also being in pursuit of what is beautiful, not in spite of it, but in it as well, or alongside of it. I don't believe in like seeking total optimism or positivity. I just think that being powerful and very awake and alert and hungry and curious within whatever the subject matter or situation is, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And accepting the results of your investigation. So if you're curious, you're constantly investigating mm-hmm. and constantly questioning and being willing to accept whatever results you find as a result of that investigation mm-hmm. Or whatever conclusion you reach as a result of that investigation is as good at whether the conclusion you reach is negative or whether you decide this is just a tragic, sad thing.
Yes, yes.
The goal is to see it for what it is.
To be vividly awake, I guess.
And accept it.
Yes.
Because the accepting is what brings it to a close. The accepting is what allows you to have it mm-hmm. and believe it in its true form.
Right.
Right. and not be constantly insisting that, no, it can't be that. It has to be something else. No, you have to, when you get there, you just, I mean, look, in a purely just sort of simplistic example, you know, Chris and I went on a road trip in May, and we knew the places, most of the places we were going to go, but it was still just a big search, a big investigation, a big exploration. And regardless of what our expectations were, how convinced we were going to be inspired, motivated, you know, filled with creative ideas. Sometimes at the end of the day, you're just sort of like, well, that restaurant was just not good. And this has been kind of a dud of a day. Despite your efforts to find something interesting and positive, you just kind of go, I can't find anything here.
It's like this state.
It just was not a good day, or it just was not a good experience, or it wasn't what I, and you're left with that disappointment. But that disappointment is a thing.
And it's
the conclusion of your investigation, and disappointment in and of itself is just as valid.
I could not agree more.
And learning to accept that, that's what I mean. Learning to accept it is how you are able to move forward to the next thing with just as much hope that you'll reach a different conclusion.
Sure.
You know, it's that acceptance, I think.
I think so much of what inspires, I feel like creativity in general, the art of staying creative is just paying attention. I think creativity lies in attention, you know, just the little things. Like, I was so creatively charged when my daughter was born, just the little contour of her jawbone and her little button chin and the grooves of her ears and her eyelashes and the little sounds that she made, just paying attention, you know, just in nature, watching the sunlight pouring through the trees. And so much of creativity, I think, whether you're paying attention to a person's emotions, their facial expressions, their countenance, their essence, or you're looking at a beautiful landscape, you know, it's paying attention. This is so much of it, I think.
That's where the subconscious acts a little bit as a safety net, because a lot of those things that you may not consciously be paying attention to are making their way into your subconscious, and they come out. For most people, they come out in things like dreams,
sure,
or in those ideas that you have in the waking state, or when you're super relaxed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or when you get angry and you just like go off on someone, and then you're like, they're like, who the hell are you? And they're like, sorry, that was my subconscious coming out.
Yeah. It's not me. It's
wasn't paying attention. Yeah. I wasn't being conscious for a minute.
Yeah. And
it's
that,
true.
That happens too. Because a lot of things they'll say, who are you? But they'll also say, where did that come from?
Yeah. And it's like, it's in my programming. I didn't even know it was in there either.
That's right. And right? Something happened. There was a fissure in my subconscious right then that allowed some toxic gas to shoot up
exactly,
into the consciousness,
precisely.
And it comes out like a lightning bolt.
And you're even shocked by it. You're like, holy shit, I don't know what that was.
I'm sorry. I have no idea where that came from.
Yeah.
Right.
My mom or my grandma taught it to me a long time ago, and it was downloaded in my brain when I was like 7, and it just popped up and said hello.
And then when it happens, you have to own it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yep, that was me.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's part of the acceptance.
Exactly. Yeah.
When you've created something, or when you are creating something, how do you know when it's good? Okay. And I think a related question to this is, for whom do you create? And when do you become satisfied with it? Like, how can you tell that you're satisfied with it?
So these are not cut and dry. They're awesome questions, by the way. And I'm glad that you asked, because they're super important questions. For one thing, anytime I'm creating a piece of work, no matter what it is, a book, my workbook that I released recently, the first hardback that I'm in process of finishing up right now, an essay, an explainer, a feature story in a magazine, I always have this little avatar in my head of who I'm talking to. Now, that doesn't mean that that's, you know, it could be a woman, 32, she just went through a divorce, she's heartbroken. Whatever the subject matter is, I have a person in mind. That doesn't mean that, I mean, I could impact people who are nothing like that, but I always am talking to her. So I think that's a really good thing a person can do with any creative work. Like, who are you trying? Because you almost, I don't know that you can talk to really anybody if you are talking to everybody. I feel like I get my best work when I am really zoning in, because it allows me in my head to connect with that person's heart, their essence, whoever, even if they're just a made up person. Sometimes it's a person I know or a person I met, you know, whoever pops into my head that I feel like would need this material that I'm, you know, whatever the subject matter is. So that's really important. I decide who I'm talking to. I don't always know when it's good. Sometimes I'm shocked when people respond to something and that they love, and I didn't think it was that great. That absolutely happens. And there have been times that I thought something was my best work and it wasn't well received. There are times, though, that I know and I'm right. I feel this little tingle. I'm like, holy shit, I've got something, and I do. That probably only happens about 20 to 30% of the time. I would be awesome if it happened all the time, or if I could figure out how to do that all the time, but I haven't figured that one out yet. But there are times when I know, and I'm right. And there are times where I'm like, yeah, I really think I've got something. And then other people are like, that's cool. And I'm like, okay, well. But no matter what, I show up 100%. Creatively, I give everything that I've got, and I allow myself to be enlivened and enriched by the process, no matter what, and regardless of outcome, I'm grateful for the experience. And then how do I know when it's done? One of my teachers told me, my writing teachers, I went to Belmont, and I remember her saying to us, and I never have forgotten, she would say, know when it's finished. It's very simple. Know when it's finished. And I keep, when I know that I'm getting at the end, I mean, I struggle with perfectionism like so many people do. I can rework and retool and edit and change over and over. And there have been times when I have wanted something to be so good, so bad that I overwork it, and then it ends up getting fucked up because I screwed it up, you know? So I try to keep that in my head, know when it's finished. And it's hard to describe. I think it's kind of something that you, it comes with practice, but there's just something that I feel, and it's like, we're done. And I go, even if my ego wants to keep going, I'm very allegiant to that. I obey that. And I'm like, okay.
I actually will call things done probably too soon. I like mowing through tasks.
Okay.
So if my fault would be that I call it done too soon.
Okay. So you, because you like to get onto the next thing, mm-hmm, and create something else.
Yep.
Oh, that's so funny. Everyone's so different. Because for me, I'm so in love with the process that I just want to kind of keep it going sometimes. And I don't want to say goodbye.
Yeah. The ending for me comes pretty suddenly a lot of times.
Okay.
Like I love the journey as well. And a lot of times it's more about the journey than the destination. Mm-hmm. But the I'm done thing happens quickly.
Okay.
It's an avalanche. It's like, I'm excited. This is great. And all of a sudden it's done through with it.
Okay,
on
bye.
To the next thing.
Okay, okay,
I don't need to see this anymore.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Does you feel like that works for you?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I mean, that's, you're asking me to judge my own work there,
right?
But it's like, I enjoy the making a lot of times, yeah, more than the releasing.
What about you?
Well, when it's done,
Do you have that clarity? Do you follow, like,
sometimes
that
it's done because I've reached the deadline.
Okay.
And sometimes it's done because I realized that the thing that I was trying to create actually can't be created the way that I'm trying to do it. And that I need to stop and think about this some more and find the appropriate way to, you know, kind of refine it a little bit. It's too broad, mm-hmm, or it's not broad enough. And I started before I was prepared, before I knew how to finish it.
Yeah.
But some things are done if it's in the case of a photo or something, especially if it's a photo that I'm editing in Photoshop or in some sort of post-production process, because then you have time. You can edit endlessly, right? But at some point, in your own brain, in my own head, I have to say, no, I think that's it. I think that's it. And it, the way that I usually know that I've reached that is after I've taken enough breaks from it and I've come back and I've liked what I've done previously enough to where I don't change it. And I go, okay, I'm happy with what I did last night on this. It looks good. I'm going to give it another day. And then I come back again and I look at it and I go, actually, I could do this or I could do that, but I don't think that's going to make it any better or worse. I'm happy with it. And then I might go one more break, one day or 2 day period, and come back and look at it again and go, no, I think that's it. I think that's it. I don't need to, in a way, I'm second guessing myself.
Yeah.
But I don't need to second guess myself anymore because I've third, fourth, fifth guessed myself now. And now I'm just wasting time. Let's call this done, put it up on the website or send it in or do whatever.
I can absolutely say that's true because I've asked you, like when we're working on our film and I've asked you to reach out to somebody, I'll follow up a couple of days later, my email. I'll follow up a couple of days later. Have you sent that email yet? And go, you'll go, no, it's in my outbox. I'm just thinking about it.
Yeah.
And it'll sit there and you think about it, reread it, think about it again. And it might take you several days to get an email out. Whereas I'll bang it out and send it. And I just, if it's wrong, it's wrong. Fuck it.
Yeah. sometimes then I'll be like, oh, I should have like edited that more.
Or just proofread it.
About what I wanted to say. Sometimes I'm just like, but I don't know. I don't usually have a lot of that. I don't usually have very many regretful emails.
At best, I'll read it one more time before I hit send.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's all within there's nothing happening in between those two things.
Gotcha.
It's writing. And then I'll reread it. I'll hit send. Screw it. It's out.
So I was late coming to the studio this morning to get ready for this podcast because a client had emailed me and asked me to look for some archival materials that I had produced or materials I produced that were now in my archives. And so once I found what they were looking for, it wasn't quite in the same state that it was that they were looking for. And so I had to explain what I had and how what I had differed from the thing that they were looking for. And so I wrote an email and I'm again, clock's ticking in my head because I got a 45-minute drive to get here. And so clock's ticking in my head. And so I bang out this email and I go, yeah, okay, that says it perfectly. And I thought, you know, before I send this, I'm just going to go put my shoes on, change my pants, and I'll come back and read this. And I came back and I read it and I was like, oh my God, that's so confusing what I wrote there. So I tweaked it again. And then I thought, okay, I'm going to go get my coffee ready and go put it in the car. And I let it sit. And it was only like 3 minutes. And then I came back and I thought, my God, that's still so confusing. So I wrote, P.S. As I read back over this, it's very confusing. If you find that it's confusing also, just call me and we'll talk about it.
You're right? So funny.
And so,
did she call?
She hasn't called yet, but you know, my phone's on silent here. Maybe she has called.
That seems like a great place to end this podcast.
Well, I tell you what, if we end it there, then I would say that this is round one of a scheduled 8-round fight or podcast because this could go on and on and on and on and we will be calling you again.
I hope so. Thank you.
Because this is an evolving. It's.
I love that organic. You have studied the neuroscience of creativity. I just think that there's so much power in neuroscience having an understanding of the brain is so fascinating. So much of what drives my work.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
Well, we like to wrap up the show by talking about things we're looking forward to.
Okay.
So is there something you're looking forward to here coming up soon?
So many things. I'm looking forward to life.
something more specific than that.
Yeah. Quite a few things. So I'm working on a piece for a magazine, a kind of illuminating some pretty scary plastic surgery and medical issues. So I'm working on that. And I'm also writing my first hardback that will be out sometime next year. And I'm also finishing up. I released a 100-page digital program, ebook, workbook in the spring that's performed really well. And so I'm coming out with its physical version. I'm so excited. It'll be released probably December the 12th before Christmas.
Awesome. And we'll have all of those links on the show notes.
Yeah. That's what I'm looking forward to. What are you guys looking forward to?
About you?
I'm looking forward to seeing the new James Bond movie. I made myself wait. I wanted to go the week it opened, but we were busy.
Uh-huh.
And I'm to the point now where I'm like, okay, I'm not going to wait anymore. I'm going to go see this movie.
You guys seen the Pixar movie Soul?
No.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. You haven't? Have you seen it?
No, but I heard an interview with the two guys, the two directors, and I watched a little BTS featurette about it. And you'll think this is so stupid. I haven't watched it because I don't want it to be over.
I know exactly what you mean. I do this all the time, but you will watch it over and over again. It will never be over.
Yeah, I get serious. That. It's the same reason I haven't watched Ted Lasso season 2, because I always want to have that in front of me to look forward to.
Everybody listening to this, please watch the movie Soul. If you're a creative, you need to watch it. I'm begging you to
watch it. I got to find it now. I'm not sure I've even heard of it.
It's a Disney.
It came out about this time last year.
It did. It is profound. It's surprisingly profound.
Okay. All their films are.
Yeah, it is.
Is it animated?
Pixar.
Okay.
And please watch it. Right. And just relax. It is just, it's poignant and it's feel good and it's thought provoking and it's funny and light and so many things.
Okay. I'll put the trailer to the show notes because I've never even seen the trailer.
I have probably watched it. My daughter, I have a 2.5-year-old. We're always on the Disney app, and it popped up one day and she became obsessed with it. She loves the jazz music in it. She loves music. And I was watching it one day and I was just entranced. I mean, I was just like spellbound, and I've probably watched it. I mean, that was 2 months ago when I first watched it. I've probably watched it 25 times.
Oh, wow.
I've just had it on. I mean, some of that is my daughter wanting to see it, but I'm in love with it. I find myself wanting to stay in that space.
Mm-hmm.
It has sparked me in so many ways. I'm not even done with the ways that it sparked me, truly.
Yeah.
It's a brilliant film, I think.
Excellent.
Besides watching Soul, what are you looking forward to?
I have a lot of irons in the fire right now, and I'm looking forward to throwing a couple of those irons into a bucket of cold water. I have too much going on right now, and it's stressing me out. So I'm looking forward to wrapping up some stuff. I thrive off of getting things done. We talked about, and I have a half dozen or more things that are large things that are weighing on me right now.
Yeah.
And I got to get them off.
That's a bummer.
I got to get them off.
Yeah. Free yourself.
Yes. I'm working on that.
Free yourself.
Free yourself.
Free yourself.
That's right.
Well, Lacey, we want to thank you for coming today. It's been a joy talking with you. And as Mark said, we definitely need to have you back on.
Oh, thank you so much for saying that.
Yeah. And we will have links to all of your socials, which you're doing it correctly in that your socials are all the Lacey Johnson.
They are.
In some capacity.
Yes.
So anything you want to find about the Lacey Johnson.
See, I'm cringing right now. Everyone listening, just so you know, we had a talk before. I cringe that my social media, it's the Lacey Johnson. I don't think I'm the one and only.
It's better than Lacey Johnson 47.
Or whatever. Exactly. That is. Yeah. And I didn't want to do Lacey Johnson official because I'm not that cool.
Yeah.
But yes, it is the Lacey Johnson.
There is nothing wrong with you beat out the other Lacey Johnsons to having the Lacey Johnson.
Yeah. So that's all your socials.
Yep.
And Lacey is LACEY.
Yes.
But your website is just LaceyJohnson.com.
It is. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sure is.
Well, Creativity in Motion is produced by the hardworking team at Penumbra Entertainment.
If you like this conversation we had with Lacey today, please consider subscribing to our podcast so you never miss an episode. Online, you can find us at penumbra-ent.com. That's also where you can find the show notes for this or any other episodes. And on Facebook and Instagram, we are Penumbra Films.
We want to thank all of you who have found this show and are listening. We would love to hear from you, so if you have questions or comments for Chris or me, please send us an email at creativity@penumbra-ent.com.
We hope you'll join us on the next episode of the Creativity in Motion podcast. Until then, don't forget, be prepared, but be sure to let magic happen.
Genius.